On this very lengthy episode of Baseball Barbacast, we preview the playoffs. Hello? It is September 29th and the games like super matter now. So we're going to go through all four of the wild card matchups, talk about those in great detail. We will eulogize the Mets. What in the heck happened there? And then fly through games 162. A lot of weird stuff happens on the final day. We'll cover all that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to this live edition of Baseball Barbacast. I am Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman. Good morning, Jordan.
Hey, friend. The baseball season is over, or is it just beginning? Jake Mintz, it is Monday. It is September 29th. It is not quite October yet, but we are almost there. And on this special live edition of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to preview it, or at least this wild card round, which begins tomorrow. We have a lot to talk about on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, as I mentioned. And if you're joining us on YouTube or on X or on TikTok or on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, YouTube, let us know. We'll get to some comments later on in this show. But before we get to all the baseball, Jake, we should say we have some exciting personal news that we won't belabor too long, which is that we're sticking around at Yahoo Sports. This is a huge deal for us. We are so excited about this. This has been our home now for two seasons, and it has been the best home we have had to make baseball things, and I am very excited that it will continue.
Best place I've worked, besides when you and I worked together, it was just the two of us in high school, and you were my boss. But besides that, this has been splendid, and we're ants. Like, this is a great home for us, and we're excited to make so much more baseball gobbledygook. And that begins today with this live show, because this is the best time of the year. Tomorrow, the first day of the wild card round, one of the best days of the seasons, four games going at the same time. It's hectic. It's chaotic. It's total madness. And on this episode, we are going to preview all four wild card games.
And with that in mind, let's get right to it. Our opener.
We will begin in the American League, because that is where we will be. I am hopping on a train. No free ads. Shout out to Amtrak. I am hopping on a train here in a couple hours to head up to New York City, where the Boston Red Sox will also be visiting the New York Yankees. You, as a Northeast Ohio resident, you will be making the drive to Progressive Field somehow for that series. But we will begin in the Bronx. The rivalry. The showdown, the New York Yankees against the Boston Red Sox, a prospect as scintillating as it is overwrought. But I gotta say, this is the perfect for a neutral. Three games of this is the correct amount. Seven, like a Yankees Red Sox seven game set, I know it's good for business and would generate a lot of interest. I think by the end of it, I would need a nap. Three games, get in and get out. Heck yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. Obviously, we had the one game version of this a few years back, and we were lucky enough to be in the building at Fenway Park for that. But in this case, the Yankees will be the hosts, and they have an opportunity to, again, for much of this summer, it was like, oh no, this team, they just don't have it. I mean, for pretty much all of June and July, even though this roster still looked great and Aaron Judge was Barry Bonds, you're like, nope, it's not happening for this team. There is no way that this is a team that is going to go deep into October. However, even winning this one series, and this is true for any team that wins a wildcard round, feels like the ultimate springboard to something more. And I think that that is very much right there for the Yankees. And being able to do it against the Red Sox would be all the more, all the better.
I will briefly summarize the 2025 Red Sox season. What chaos. What madness. Just completely disorganized, all over the place. They trade Rafael Devers. They have him play DH, and then they don't let it. And they ask him to move to first, and he says, no, thanks, I'm okay. They send him to San Francisco. They have rookies come up. There are injuries, and they battle through it all. And in the end, their path to October was relatively straightforward. They end up being the 5 seed, and they will head to New York to play the New York Yankees here tomorrow. Let's go through the projected starters as far as we possibly know. Game one is going to be Garrett Crochet against Max Fried. Two left-handed aces squaring off in prime time. Game two, Lucas Giolito against Carlos Rodon. Longtime friends of the program. Lucas versus Carlos in a playoff game on the night that Yom Kippur begins. Sounds like a bad bit we would do on a podcast in 2015. And then Brian Bayo against Cam Schlittler is the most likely setup for game three.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the fact that, I mean, first of all, the Red Sox in general being back in the postseason, of course, Crochet is a new character, but all of these guys are new characters. Pop quiz, Jake, do you know how many current Red Sox were on the roster the last time they were in the postseason in 2021 in the ALCS? In the roster.
Garrett Whitlock.
Yep. Yeah. Any others? Any others? Well, if I wanted to make this, a trick question, I would say two: Garrett Whitlock and Alex Bregman, who played in the CS. But of course, that was not with the Red Sox. But otherwise, it is just Garrett Whitlock. I believe Connor Wong and Jaron Duran maybe appeared in that season. But this is just a completely different group. So of course, Crochet feels fresh, and Giolito is a new guy. And you know, you have some of these rookies that were maybe going to see younger players. But just the whole Red Sox team, whereas the Yankees, outside of Max Fried and of course some of their rookies, we're kind of been used to seeing these guys in the postseason recently.
I think this whole series kind of hinges on game one, which is not, that's not reinventing the wheel. But like, Crochet is one of the best four pitchers on the planet. He is dominant. He is dominating. And even though I think the Yankees are the better team, and I think the Yankees will win the series, there is certainly a possibility, in fact, a high probability, that Crochet just storms into the Bronx and carves in this first game against the Yankees. And I think that will really dictate how things go from there.
Yeah, I think the other thing about this series too is, you know, the Yankees have been playing well. They couldn't quite catch Toronto, but the Red Sox were, I think it was what, 9-4 against the Yankees this season? So, you know, it's not like the Red Sox have had trouble with them necessarily. We've had some memorable matchups, particularly with Crochet, that we're certainly looking forward to. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the other characters, like the Red Sox that I'm thinking about, the player I'm thinking about is Alex Bregman. I just mentioned him before. This will be his 9th straight postseason. We'll get to the Astros missing the playoffs later. But Alex Bregman is going to be playing in his 100th career playoff game tomorrow, which I believe is 7th all time, or maybe 8th all time. And this is just what he does. This is why they brought him there, because he knows how to get to the postseason. And while injuries kind of interrupted what looked like was maybe going to be like a top five MVP finish at the you know, first half of the season, he is clearly still an extremely important part of this team, and also fits in the overall theme for these first two games in particular, which is the Yankees, or which is the Red Sox right-handed hitters against the Yankees left-handed starters.
Yeah, I would say the player that I'm thinking about, and that's kind of along a similar line, is Carlos Rodon. Like, I have a lot of faith in Max Fried going out there and being Max Fried, right? And throwing 6 strong innings, allowing 1 or 2 runs, and keeping the Yankees close. That's what he does. Rodon is somewhat of a question mark. So this is year 3 for him in the Bronx. Year 1, catastrophe. Year 2, signs of progress. Uneven playoff performance. Really horrible World Series start in game 2 that everyone forgets because, in our minds, the World Series ended when Freddie Freeman homered. Rodon then comes back this year, a very different pitcher. Added a sinker to his mix. He's throwing a lot more changeups. The fastball velocity is down, but he's been as effective as ever. He's going to get down ballot Cy Young votes, I think. ERA right around 3. Made every single start this year. Can he do it in the playoffs? Can he do it in the playoffs against a Red Sox team that he's faced three times this year and frankly struggled against? And if you kind of want to design the path of how the Red Sox win, it's crochet shoves and then Rodon poops his pants and the right-handed hitting bats just hop on him. Like, that's how this goes well for Boston. And I'll pivot now. You mentioned this before. Like, the thing that I'm thinking about, like, I'm thinking about Rodon, the player, and I'm thinking about, like, as a theme, those Red Sox right-handed bats against the lefty starters, right? And that's Romy Gonzalez and Rob Refsnyder, two guys who just face lefties, and they crush them. And then you have Carlos Narvaez, the catcher, who's really good against lefties. Alex Bregman, really good against lefties. I'm fascinated to see how the Red Sox deploy, like, Nate Eaton and Nick Sogard, if they get starts against the lefty. So that, to me, that is just such an important thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, Romy and Refsnyder are the whole thing. And I can imagine there's going to be, for the casual fan tuning into Yankees Red Sox, and they look at the lineups for these first two games, you'd be like, really? Like, these are the guys the Red Sox are doing? Like, this is outrageous. But their numbers are ridiculous. I mean, this is not just standard, oh, he's a pretty good platoon bat. There's a reason they have done this all year, and that's why that they're going to keep doing it. They're not going to suddenly change. You know, guys like Duran and Abreu is essentially unplayable against lefties. Duran is going to be in there, but he hasn't been very good against lefties. Yoshida, same thing. Will we see Nathaniel Lowe? I don't know, but it is funny and part of this is because of the injuries, because they don't have Devers, because they don't have Roman Anthony, because he's hurt. So of this is just a response to the roster. But I think that for the most part, you know, this has worked for Boston. And so I would not expect them to.
Romy Gonzalez, 978 OPS this year against left-handed hitting.
Yeah.
Like all-star, like borderline MVP candidate. When the pitcher throws with their left arm.
Yeah. And his underlying stuff is nuts. His hard hit rate, his average exit velocity is like in line. It's not just like, oh, he's, you know, poking singles the other way against lefties, and that's why he's in there.
He is
doing serious, serious damage. But yeah, I mean, I just think that for both of these teams, how we got here, I know we ended up picking the Red Sox. I know Alex Cora had a quote recently or whatever yesterday, like, nobody believed in us and whatnot. It's like, all right, dude, a lot of people were picking you to make the postseason. A lot of people were picking you to win the division. There was all kinds of hype. I don't know if he was saying, like, people counted us out after we traded Devers. I don't know if it was more specifically, like, everyone assumed we were just going in the other direction after that trade. But either way, people looked at the Red Sox talent and said, they're a pretty good team. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a tweet from Christopher Smith, who covers the Red Sox for Mass Live. Alex Cora, quote, let's be honest. Nobody thought we were going to make it to October when the season started. Whoever says that, yeah, we were a playoff team, that's effing BS, to be honest with you. No one thought we were going to make it to October. It was New York. It was Baltimore. It was Toronto. Shade to the Rays. And we believed we were going to play in October. We set our standards every single day, and we hit our standards. I went back and looked at various outlets to see who picked what teams in the AL East. Every single writer here at Yahoo picked the Red Sox to make the playoffs. I believe they were the most popular pick to win the AL East at ESPN. I believe at Fangraphs, they had the highest number of votes to make the playoffs and to win the division. This is a classic example of they don't believe in us. Now, maybe did we believe in you less when you traded away the best player on your team? Yes, we did. And I think that that's very reasonable and rational to have lower expectations for the Red Sox after trading away Devers, but they did it. And I give them a lot of credit for that. There are a lot of holes on this team that concern me as they head into October. The lineup is good, not great. I think the gap between them and the Yankees is pretty substantial in that regard. Jordan, what is kind of, let's pivot back to the Yankees. What's one thing you're really thinking about for them?
I just think that as kind of what I opened with, it's just the opportunity here to prove a lot of people wrong that said that. I mean, listen, there's a long way to go for them to get back to the postseason or to back to the World Series. But still, this is a potential massive pitfall, very realistic. And just you just lose to Crochet and you lose to the Red Sox at home. And we're all laughing at the Yankees for similar but different reasons than last year, right? That's totally in play. Or you can be the better team, which you have been over the Red Sox for most of the season when you're not actually playing them. And you can be, and we can wake up and be like, wait a minute, the Yankees are the best team in the American League.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay. And everyone's going to be picking them against the Blue Jays, right? That's also very possible. So there's a pretty huge swing here that we are going to see over these next 72 hours.
Well, I think it's important to remember in Yankee land, and this is true in Philly land too, but in Yankee land, the sky is always falling, right? The Yankees, I finished the season with the second best record in the American League. And so much of the year, it was like, oh no, like this team is a disaster. They're a catastrophe. Are they good enough? They led baseball in nearly every offensive category. Okay, this is probably the best lineup in the league. And it is very conceivable that they're just going to go out there and storm through the American League field and end up back in the World Series. I think that that is a real possibility. Also, because I think is currently constructed, this is the best roster in the American League. I know that the Jays won the division and they deserve credit for doing so. They earned that bye. I'm not trying to, you know, overlook them, but not having Bo Bichette is a big deal for them. The Yankees are healthy as they enter October. I think that is super important. I love the way that this team is set up. Let's make a pick.
So we did our official picks. You can see them all on yahoosports.com. We have our full predictions. I went back and forth on the Red Sox and the Yankees here. I do think Boston has a real shot, but I'll stick with the Yankees because, again, I do think that the talent gap is pretty significant. And I do trust Max Fried. I do trust Carlos Rodon. I do think that they can get the crochet. I think that they do have enough offense to make it happen. We'll see how they do against Toronto. And maybe they don't get that far. I will go Yankees in three.
Also, just dude, compared to last year, like when the Yankees lineup last year like was sneaky not that good. You know what I mean? Like that was one of the big things for that team and they went to the World Series anyway. I mean, Ben Rice and Grisham just gives them so much more depth. I'm going to take them in two. I think someone's hitting a big homer off Crochet. I think Fried keeps it close. My biggest concern with the Yankees is the bullpen. They have tried to Band-Aid it. David Bednar has been big in the closer spot. Devin Williams and Luke Weaver have struggled. Weaver has had a really bad September, as has Fernando Cruz. There are big names and big pedigrees in the bullpen, but it is not exactly a group that inspires confidence right now.
Yep, that is super valid. But it seems like we are both picking the Yankees, and you will be there to tell us all about it. Now, where will I be, Jake Mintz? I will be back for round 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 of Guardians Tigers, however you want to call it. This is a rivalry that has blossomed into something truly brilliant, truly unpredictable. And now we have a series with two teams heading in very different directions. But as AJ Hinch said during the Tigers celebration, everybody will be 0-0 on Tuesday. And the Tigers will have to take this historic blown lead that they have endured over the past few months and say, you know what? Screw it. We're here. We're in. We still have Tarek Skubal. And we are going to try and turn this around and show that as they were for the first few months, they were not just better than Cleveland, they were better than most teams. And so now the Tigers will be trying to recapture, rediscover that form in this short series rematch against the Guardians, who are one of the great stories that we've seen in since we've been doing this job, frankly, for all the things that they overcame on the field, some self-inflicted, some, of course, very much not in their control, losing two of their most important pitchers to an ongoing gambling investigation. And then just so much about this Guardians team that I've seen up close that is tough to believe, but they are here. They are the AL Central champions against all odds. But this is going to be an interesting matchup because you play the same team over and over and over and over. It's hard to imagine that the same team could just keep on winning. We have the same matchups over and over. I mean, spoiler alert, I'm going to keep picking Cleveland, but I don't want to overlook Detroit too much here.
So in previewing this in written form on Yahoo, one of our categories was how did they get here? And what I wanted to write for these two teams to answer that question was, how did they get here? Together but separate, right?
Yeah.
The story of the Guardians season and the story of the Tigers season, they do not exist without the other, right? What is the Newton's third law? For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Mm. As the Tigers sank, the Guardians rose. Thank you. And they're so intertwined, and it is so beautiful and poetic that they're going to be here against one another. That, yes, they are 0-0 today. You know who doesn't feel 0-0? The Cleveland Guardians. You know who also doesn't feel 0-0? The Detroit Tigers. I think it is understandable that A.J. Hinch, Tigers manager, would say, we just got to flush it and move forward. Today's a new day. It's easier to say it than it is to do it. One time in college, on my college baseball team, we had a tough loss. And this is when I wasn't good and wasn't playing. And I had the lineup card from that day. And I posted a video of me actually flushing the lineup card down the toilet to be like, let's flush it and get him tomorrow. And then I think we lost the next day. So my point is that, like, you can't just be like, hey, all that bad energy that has ruined your last few months, wake up tomorrow and pretend like it doesn't exist. Like, it's not that simple. Like, what the Guardians have done will lead in, it will be in everyone's minds tomorrow and the next day and maybe the next day. Right? I think it is a relevant character here as we preview the series. But let's talk about the starting pitching matchups. Game one, Tarek Skubal, the reigning Cy Young in the American League and the likely Cy Young in the American League this season, the best or second best pitcher on planet Earth. He will go up against Gavin Williams, who is not the best or second best pitcher on planet Earth, but has been sensational down the stretch. His nickname, I believe, is Big Rig.
Yeah. I think, I don't know how common that is, that he's, it's one of the more niche ones, but I think that is one that has pretty been good. Ascribed to him. Yeah, no, it's pretty easy. He's a big dude. And he's been terrific, right? I mean, that no-hitter effort in Citi Field earlier this season was, I mean, not the beginning of really when he started to put it together. I mean, he has, I believe, the most walks in baseball because of how, you know, shaky he was early in the season. He still had some outings where the command, you know, kind of abandons him. But for the most part, I mean, stuff has never been a question with Gavin Williams. And lately, I mean, that game last week, again, a week ago, we just watched this exact same game last Tuesday. Skubal has that catastrophic sixth inning, and that's what we remember. Gavin Williams tied a career high with 12 strikeouts in that game. Tigers struck out 19 times. Gavin Williams, two breaking balls. He's got a curveball and a sweeper, both of which are terrific. He's throwing very hard as well. He's evolved a lot this season. He's clearly tried a lot of new stuff. He's willing to put that to work. It kind of speaks to both him and this Guardians, you know, pitching apparatus for him to be able to become a guy that you actually feel like can match up with Tarek Skubal. I just watched him do it. So, of course, you're gonna pick Skubal because Skubal is the best, and Skubal has dominated this team over and over and over and over for the last few years outside of two disastrous innings last year in the DS in Game 5 and then, of course, last week. But otherwise, all the other numbers say, like, no, Skubal's just going to keep mowing these guys down. And if the Tigers can score enough runs, they have every good as a chance as any to win this first game.
Game two is going to be Jack Flaherty, probably, for the Tigers against Tanner Bibee for the Guardians. Game three, Casey Mize, former number one overall pick, against Slade Ciccone for the Guardians. Just so everyone knows, C-E-C-C-O-N-I. Okay, that first C is going to be an S. That second C is going to be a K, and that's going to help you pronounce Ciccone correctly as we move forward, because he is a relevant character. He is very, very good. Jordan, who is the player you're thinking about? Is it Gavin Williams?
Yeah, I mean, Gavin Williams is up there. I mean, honestly, like the Tigers, it's guys like Riley Green. It's Green and Torque.
Yeah,
I mean, these guys, for what they were in the first half of the season – to be a big, of course, the pitching was better, but it was really the offense. It was like, okay, this offense is growing up. This offense is starting to look like a legitimately good unit. And it's just, I mean, the overall numbers are still good. And it's not like we don't feel good about the trajectory of Riley Green. But what was very clear is the standards are different now. And last year, as they went on their kind of memorable, unlikely run, you could kind of just be like, well, this is the first time for all these guys. They're all young. However far they make it, great. Awesome. We'll be happy at the end of the season no matter what. It's very different this year, obviously, because of how the second half has gone. And unfortunately, those standards have been raised to the point where when Riley Green, you know, it was easy to overlook the league-leading strikeouts before when the Tigers were up by 15 games. It's a little bit harder when he's striking out in huge spots over and over. Torkelson, same kind of thing. And then Gleyber Torres, who was awesome in the first half, has really faded in the second half. And that's a guy, certainly when you get to this time of year, someone who was great in the postseason last year as a leadoff man for the Yankees who went to the World Series. So that's another new character that I think, just those three Tigers hitters, I think are the ones I'm thinking about a lot.
I am thinking about Jose Ramirez. He is everything. And yeah, when the sure guard, is. I'm going to just rewind to the deadline for a second because they were so close to trading Stephen Kwan, right? That was a real thing. And they decided not to. And at the time, I gave them a lot of credit for that. Like, I was very happy with that decision. The idea being every year that Jose Ramirez is playing for your professional baseball team, you owe it to yourself, to him, and to the fan base to do everything you possibly can to try and win the World Series. He is singular, generational, the type of player that doesn't usually stay in a market like Cleveland. He steps up in every big moment for this team. And so then when they decided to keep Kwan and go for it, I was like, yes. And then it fell apart. Then they were really, really bad, right? Coming off the break, it was like, oh, this team, man, they should have traded him. And then it all turned around. And like Jose Ramirez to me, if I'm thinking about players in baseball that don't have a ring that I want to see get one, I would say Harper's one. I would say Judge is probably two and Ramirez is probably three. Players that when I look back, I want to be able to say that guy won it, right? He can show that ring off. So I cannot stop thinking about Jose Ramirez. One quick thing for me on Skubal. Like you mentioned, oh, he's been good. That is kind of an over, like it's even better than that. Okay. This year against the Guardians, Skubal made four starts. Okay. In those four starts, he struck out 40 hitters in 28 innings and allowed two earned runs. Okay. Mm-hmm. He had a complete game, two hit shutout. Remember that? I believe it was on Roku Morning Leadoff.
Best pitch game of the year.
Back in May.
Yep.
Best pitch game of the year, 13 strikeouts, two hits, nine innings. Then he had a three-hitter, seven innings, 10 Ks, six innings, one earned, six innings, one earned. He's been fabulous. Even going back to the playoffs last year, it was one swing. It was the Lane Thomas Grand Slam is the only real blemish on his record against the Guardians. And my question is, does that even matter? Because they just beat the Tigers twice with Skubal on the mound pitching really well, and it didn't matter. And so it's like,
yeah,
for all the Skubal of it all, they might just lose anyway.
Totally. That's extremely in play, and obviously the Guardians.
Can I also say something? Do you know who doesn't care? You know who doesn't care how good Skubal's been against the Guardians? The Guardians.
Oh, God, of course not. Because they're like, well, one, it's either, okay, we'll find a way in ways that you cannot even conceive of, or we'll just figure it out after against the Tigers bullpen that has been a lot shakier than it was, you know, this time a year ago. It is not as shut down as like, all right, great. Well, they've got Tyler Holton and they've got Will Vest. And it's like, okay, sometimes these guys are good, but it is not quite the same as it was a year ago. But yeah, I just think about these two teams, you know, big picture for just the stakes of the season and just what it could mean. If the Tigers win this series, and then now while they did lose the division, you know, they weren't going to have home field anyway. I mean, I guess they would have if they kept playing like they did in the first half, but this is an opportunity. This is really the chance to be like, listen, was it still an embarrassing collapse? And would we have had a better chance at the World Series had we not done this? Yes. But if you can show up to Cleveland and win here, that will show something. That will give the fans a feeling that this was not all for naught, you know? Whereas Cleveland, it's like, if you can keep this going, if you beat the Tigers, it's like, well, okay, well, you just own them to a degree that is pretty staggering in the era of modern rivalries, at least over the past few years. But then it really starts to become real, and we will see them against Seattle. Becomes a very interesting matchup for a lot of reasons. Teams who have varying levels of postseason success have been in the postseason at different times. Well, but listen, all the stats say that Cleveland should be nowhere near this, right? The negative run differential, all those big losing streaks, the lowest batting average to ever make the postseason, you know, 28th in OPS, all these things say there's no way they should be anywhere near here, but they don't care. And they are doing enough right. Their run prevention has been elite. That is what has actually driven this run. It has been just enough offense, truly elite starting pitching, and an organization that knows what it's doing. And that has been become very apparent over this past month. And I've been very excited and fortunate to get to watch that. So as for picks,
and
I'm going to say Cleveland, but I don't know how. But we don't know how they've done any of this. You said before, oh, how did they get here? I mean, literally, how? How? Emphasis on how, because I'm still trying to figure that out.
I think Skubal dominates in game one, what a hot take, and wins, and then the Guardians win the next two, and it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Hey, we'll see. Maybe the Tigers can do what they did last year, which is go on the road in that wild card round. It's very different going up against the Astros and going up against Guardians, but I can't believe I'm about to watch these two teams again. I really, really cannot. I mean, even a week ago, the possibility of this would have been preposterous. And here we are.
So the big issue, I know I said earlier that I'm happy that Yankees Red Sox has kind of shrunk to three games. Mm. But the worst part of wild card round is that the series don't really get enough time to marinate, where there aren't ebbs and flows to it. There aren't rises and falls. It's just kind of like, here's the baseball games, go play them. This series isn't that, in part because these two teams played twice over the last 10 days and that their seasons were so intertwined. And that does add like a nice level on the bottom of the cast iron skillet that I am excited to reap the rewards of. Jordan Schusterman, this is not a surprise. The Guardians-Tigers series, that is the afternoon game. That will be, I believe, at 1:08 tomorrow Eastern time. Yankees Red Sox in prime-ish time, 6 o'clock starts the first 2 days. Okay, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will do the National League.
Jake Mitz, we are back on Baseball Barbacast, and it is time to talk about the National League. Jake Mintz, the Cincinnati Reds made the playoffs. How do you feel about that?
I don't. How do I? Let's just. I guess we could start here. I don't want. I have been a hater all year about the Cincinnati Reds, and I think, in fact, my disdain for this team's relative success ages well because of how they got in. Okay. I'll explain that in a second. I don't want to rain on this parade. Reds fans should not care that this team is not that good. They should not care that they're only here because the Mets bungled it away in historic fashion. They should not care that the Reds are two games above 500. They went 83-79. They should not care about any of that because they have October baseball. And that's what matters, right? Teams do not exist to pick their own. The fan bases should not be picking their own teams apart in October. You're in. It's great. I love it. However, Jordan, man, I cannot believe this is a playoff team. All year I was like, is this a playoff team? This doesn't feel like a playoff team. Do they still feel like a playoff team to you, the Reds? Mm-hmm. They're in. And that's
they sure are. We're about to watch them. They were wearing those t-shirts that say October baseball with the Reds logo on it. So tough to say they aren't at this point. We are going to address the Mets collapse later on in this episode of Baseball Barbacast, but let's focus on the series because here the Reds are, and what a first opponent for them. There are so many things about this matchup that compel me, and to me, the contrast is beautiful. You know, had the Reds got in and, you know, even especially like if they were facing the Cubs or, you know, one of these, it would be like, okay, well, I've seen this, whatever. I love that this is about as extreme as you can get. Sure, the Dodgers did not finish with the most wins, but the spirit of these two teams and how they got here is completely different. And that is what is beautiful about it. And ultimately, as we kind of talked about last week when we realized that the Dodgers were heading for the wild card round for just the second time during this dynastic run of postseason appearances since 2013, here we go, man. You are facing the ominous randomness of a short series, and let's see if you can handle it. Now, the Dodgers, funny enough, even though they did not get to 117 wins, they didn't get to 100 wins. They didn't even get to 95. And yet, they're entering the postseason healthier and arguably way more formidable on paper than they did a year ago. Like, way, way, way more. Like, you're looking at this team, like, oh, man. Whereas last year we had questions. This time it's like, I mean, this team's so much better than the Reds. They might be so much better than everybody.
Game one, Hunter Green, the L.A. kid, grew up in the city, went to Notre Dame High School, very L.A. guy, will be throwing for the Reds in game one against Blake Snell, probably, for the Dodgers. Game two, looking like Nick Lodolo for the Reds against Yoshinobu Yamamoto for the Dodgers. And if there's a game three, it will be Andrew Abbott against a position player pitching Shohei Ohtani. This series is an exercise in extremes. The Dodgers' payroll is the GDP of a small country. The Reds, not so much. The Dodgers, it was win 110 games or bust. And for the Reds, it was sneak into the playoffs. The Reds are happy to be here. The Dodgers, the opposite, right? Now, yes, I know the Reds, our job's not finished. Like, we can do this. Like, great. If the Reds lose both games, if the Reds go two and out, season's a success, right?
I mean, yes, certainly by your standards, who didn't think they would be here. Yeah. But
if they go two and out,
yes,
it's not right. A disappointment. No,
I agree with you. I obviously understand what you're getting at. I think that for a Reds fan base,
the Dodgers go,
of course.
This is my point. Whereas if the Dodgers go two and out or the Dodgers lose the series, it is the end of the world, right? Like, it is sky fall. And so that is what is so fascinating about this matchup is the stakes are just like, it couldn't be more because usually in a playoff series, right? In the first round, it's like, I cannot believe one of these two teams is about to be done. And I feel this way about really like Yankees, Red Sox, and Padres, Cubs, where it's like, we've been thinking about these two teams and spending so much energy on these two teams and analyzing them and evaluating them all season long. The Yankees and Red Sox, like, oh, do the Red Sox have enough hitting at the bottom of the lineup? Do the Yankees have enough bullpen? And then today's Monday, and on Friday, like, one of them will just be on vacation. Whereas for this, it's like, if the Reds are, I like, yeah, I could see the Reds. Like, I could understand how they'd be out on Friday. I didn't think they were going to be here in the first place. Now look, would Mets Dodgers have had more national zest? Obviously, absolutely. For the ball knowers though, this one is arguably like, it has even more
and I think that it is more intriguing in that sense, because yes, if we did end up with Dodgers Mets, you would have been like, oh my god, there's $1 billion on the baseball field, $2 billion on the baseball field, like, this is outrageous. But because of how the Mets got there, if the Mets somehow won, you'd still be like, well, yeah, they have Juan Soto and Lindor and Alonso and whatever and whatnot, and like, it's very disappointing for the Dodgers, but like, okay, the Mets won a short series, that's fine, we've seen them do that before. In this case, to your point, yeah, it is how we will feel in the two results is just so monumentally different. And yet, because of the pitching, which is why the Reds have gotten here, they will have a chance. Hunter Green is the first part of that, but Nick Lodolo and Andrew Abbott have been two of the better left-handers in the National League this season. Abbott, of course, an all-star. Lodolo has been sneaky solid for much of this season. And how the Dodgers are lining up the pitching, you know, we assumed, okay, would it be Ohtani in game one? It seems like it's going to be Snell in game one. Based on reporting as we're recording this right now, it seems like they would be saving Ohtani for Game 3, or if they think they can sweep, which they probably do because they're the Dodgers playing the 83-win Reds, they would have Ohtani available for Game 1 against the Phillies. These are all good options. It's hard to say, oh, how dare you not start Ohtani in one of these first two games when you have Snell and Yamamoto, but there probably will be some level of second-guessing if they somehow falter and Ohtani doesn't even pitch in the postseason. I mean, how wild of an outcome would that be? But in this case, Ohtani can focus on hitting more home runs and powering the offense as the Dodgers, especially against a stout Cincinnati pitching staff, which has obviously been good enough to get them there. The bullpen has been also quietly quite good. Emilio Pagan has been very solid. Tony Santian's pitched in like half the games. Chase Burns, the rookie fireballer, is now in the bullpen. That is a serious weapon for them to be able to turn to in some high leverage spots. Meanwhile, conversely, as we get to just the players that we're thinking about, the Dodgers bullpen is the weakness, right? Even though they've spent a bunch on it and they are basically healthy now. There is one Dodgers injury we need to talk about, but for the most part on the mound, they're healthy. And now they might even have Roky Sasaki back and they might have these other things, but how they're getting outs late in games. I mean, Dave Roberts is going to be holding on for dear life.
I think the two left-handed starters in games 2 and 3 against the Dodgers is a very interesting storyline to watch. Mm. Ohtani is incredible against anybody. So is Freddie Freeman. But if you're going to, like, the path towards trying to mitigate the Dodgers feels like it is with left-handed pitching. I feel better about a lefty trying to trick Michael Conforto and Miguel Rojas
and Muncy,
Andy Pajes,
you know, yeah.
Whereas it's like versus like a righty trying to beat Muncy, Ohtani, Freeman, right? Sure. Like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my read on it. The player that I'm thinking about is this guy named Dodger Bullpen.
Yep. I mean, take your pick, dude, because all of these guys are, you know, entering the postseason with kind of a different storyline, right? I mean, think about that. What we were saying about Trinan as just the ultimate stopper at this time, you know, last year, and what he proved in October, and you still watch him, and the stuff is unbelievable. But he's had some horrible outings, and then Tanner Scott, man. I mean, you give a reliever, you know, $70 million, and it's been a catastrophe. There's no way around it. But he's gonna pitch. He's gonna show up at some point. I think, you know, Vesia, Jack Dreyer have gotten some higher leverage spots of Tanner Scott, and that's what's going to be interesting.
I want to roll through the bullpen very quickly.
Okay.
Because I think all of these characters are fascinating. Tanner Scott, like you said, gets $72 million and has just, I think he leads the league in blown saves. He has just coughed up late game leads again and again and again. Alex Vesia, I think, is the most reliable reliever right now. He's been in the Dodgers for a while. Lefty, gets a lot of outs. He did have an injury towards the end of the season. He on my trust tree, I think I would have him at number one. Anthony Bonda, similar type of guy with less impact, left-handed reliever that you've seen. You know that guy's deal. Then you have this like fascinating group of dudes that are really just starters. They're just starters that are going to be pitching in the bullpen. That is true. Justin Wroblewski. That is, frankly, Ben Kasperius, if he's on the roster. That is Jack Dreyer, who was moved to the bullpen this year. They viewed him as a starter as, like, not that long ago. That is Landon Knack. That is Roky Sasaki. Like, there are the Dodgers just have a lot of right-handed pitchers, or excuse me, a lot of starting pitchers that they're just going to use as relievers. And I just don't trust this thing. I do not trust this group at all.
Well, and how all hands on deck are we talking, right? I mean, are Sheehan and Glass now even going to be on the roster? We know Kershaw's not going to be, but Emmett Sheehan's another one that I'm thinking about. Or are we making sure that he's available?
I think Sheehan and Glass now will both be on the roster.
Okay, so then there's another two guys that if we're freaking out and we're trying to get to 27 outs and no one is doing the job, there's a lot of opportunity. In theory, it's like, oh, look at all these great options. But it's been so volatile with how much you're counting on them versus the ultimate talent and potential that you think you're calling on when you put them in the game, especially if you're now asking Tyler Glass now to pitch in relief or you're asking Sheehan to come in. So that's where it gets spicy. I guess Ohtani, we're assuming, is staying in a starting role at least for now. But these guys, I agree with you. They could go in a lot of different directions.
Well, I mentioned the trust tree. I think most teams enter October with a pretty clear understanding of how they rank their own relievers, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm pulling up the Yankees bullpen right now. Okay. Bednar, most trustworthy. Then it's like Williams Weaver, and then it's like Cruz Doval, and then it's Tim Hill to get a lefty, right? For the Phillies, it's Duran at the back, and then it's like Strom Kirkering and David Roberts. Like, you know these tiers. They're very clear because teams want to have that understanding before they enter October, so that when it's like, hey, in this situation, we're pressing this button. I look at the Dodgers trust tree, and I don't trust. Like, what is the plan? I don't know. It's like no one's fault. There's been injuries and underperformance and whatever.
Well, it's everyone's fault.
Fault. How Dave Roberts chooses to deploy the bullpen is going to be fascinating. Now, it might not matter, right? It might not matter because there's a scenario where Hunter Green goes five innings and lets up three runs, and then the Reds bring in someone to bridge the gap, and that's like Graham Ashcraft. And he just gets clobbered by Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts, and the Dodgers win 10-2, right? That is very possible. Yep. And it's like, oh, well, who cares who the Dodgers are bringing in relief? They're up by two touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe it doesn't matter until later on in the playoffs.
Sure. And we'll continue to have those conversations. The player I'm thinking about, I just want to give the Reds a little bit more love and just, you know, what's on my mind about them.
I'm giving them tons of love.
It's really two things.
It's tough love.
That's true. That's a good way to look at it. Let's talk about Ellie, because this is a player who, of course, I was so fortunate to be in the Cincinnati area in 23 when he debuted, and to watch him look to be on an MVP trajectory last season. It was like, all right, well, he's just going to keep getting better and better and better. And this was a very, very strange season for Ellie De La Cruz. And you have to acknowledge that he was in all likelihood playing through some injuries. He had a tragedy off the field, the death of his sister. Of course, you can never underestimate how much that impacts players, the things that they're dealing with. And throughout, yeah, you know, I mentioned all that. This is a guy that played 162 games. You look at the players that played 162 games this year, they're all first basemen and DHs. And then it's Ellie De La Cruz, who basically played, I think, 159 games or 60 games at shortstop. And yet the numbers do not reflect the trajectory we assumed that he was on, which was just a rocket ship ride to like 8 WAR without a doubt, you know, hitting 30 homers and stealing 80 bases and playing gold glove defense. Like, that's where it seemed like we were heading. That did not happen this season. He went like 2 months without homering. And yet he's so young and he was posting every day, and you don't want to be too harsh on him. But when you look at this Reds lineup and you're wondering how are you going to match up with the Dodgers, you need Ellie to do something really cool, probably. I mean, maybe not in just two games, but if we're talking about the Reds as a real threat, you're going to need Ellie to really show up, because they have these other role players that have stepped up, and it'll be cool to see Gavin Lux going up against the Dodgers, and Noel V. Marte's been a nice story. Wow. Miguel Andujar has been like a really sneaky, awesome ad. Tyler Stevenson is a really, you know, longest tenured Red. Like, I like these players, but Ellie's the guy. Ellie's the guy that you're tuning into, and be like, why are the Reds in the playoffs? All right, well, at least I get to watch Ellie De La Cruz. That is what the casual fan's going to be thinking, but it has not been the season we expected. I still believe in Ellie more than almost any other player. I'm excited to see what this looks like for him in the postseason for the first time.
If you told me that the Reds were going to sneak in and get a wild card spot, I'm like, oh, Ellie finished top three in MVP voting.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. You know? That's a great way to put it. And instead, that's just not the case. So we'll see with Ellie. And then the last thing on the Reds before we move on to Cubs Padres is they've embraced this mantra. You know, you can't kill us. We're the Reds. It's like, okay, but can you kill anyone else? Like, you have survived. You have survived.
Fastest from the bear,
right?
Brother.
That's fine, right? But at this point, now it's like, all right, well, this is a great opportunity. Like, if you can beat the Dodgers, then I'm done doubting you, right? So it's a little bit of a different thing.
Well,
so
duh.
We will see how that goes, and anything's possible in this short series. And then the historical context, man. Pick. This team hasn't won a playoff series since 1995. And the last time they did it, it was against the Dodgers, but that was 30 years ago. So NLDS, 1995 NLDS is the last time that the Reds won a postseason series. That is the longest drought in Major League Baseball. And so this is a tough one to try and do, but only got to get two games, and maybe they have the pitching to do it.
Pick?
I'm going to go with the team with Shohei Ohtani, I think. Yeah. Yep. Going with Ohtani. Going to do that. Sorry, Reds. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Terry Francona. That's the name we probably should have said. Who are you picking?
Reds in two.
Hell yeah, brother.
I am picking the Reds despite all my frustration. I want to separate the incredulousness that fills me when I think about the Reds being in October. Right? They did not go and take this. They played 500 baseball after the deadline. They did not get hot. They lost a series to the Pirates at home in the final week of the season. They did not grab the bull by the horns.
Nope.
Right?
The bull trampled the Mets. So you can't kill them.
Dude, the Dodgers are so much better. I think Hunter Green is that guy. And I think Hunter Green is going to pitch really well in game one. And I think the Dodgers bullpen is a real problem. Mm. And there have been moments this year where the Dodgers just can't get their own head out of their own ass. And they can't flip the switch and they can't get going. They looked really good against the Mariners over the weekend. I understand that. But like, if the Reds can keep it close, man, if the Reds can keep it close and like the Dodgers just start giving innings away and like it gets tense at Chavez Ravine, like there is a path here to what would be one of the most memorable postseason upsets in a long time.
That's the thing. That's why we're tuning in. That's why we're staying up late to watch these games this week. Because yeah, man.
Here's the thing. I mean, here's the thing, dude. We don't get upsets in this sport really, because if you're in October, you're probably pretty good, right? Part of the reason that March Madness is so fun is because you get, you know, North Texas is like a 17 seed beating Duke, you know, once every 30 years. And you're guaranteed like two or three of those Cinderellas a season.
17
and you're like,
seeds.
I cannot wait to see, you
never,
know.
You never want to underestimate the 17 seeds. What seed would the Reds be? Like if we were giving the Reds by like the March Madness equivalent.
Dodgers are a two seed.
Right. Like, are they like a...
They were the number one overall team heading into the year. They like... The Reds are a 10 seed. Yeah. It's like the 10-2. It's the 10-2
matchup. Probably disrespectful. Yeah, anyway. Okay, so that's the Reds and the Dodgers.
Disrespectful to who? The 10 seed?
We will see. We will see if you can't kill. This would be something. This really, really would be something. But you mentioned there are no upsets in this sport. We're gonna come back to that point. All right, let's go to our next series, Jake. Let us talk.
Our last one.
About the Cubs and the Padres. The Cubs are hosting postseason baseball. And good news, Chicago, you can go to the games. Unlike in 2020, when no one was allowed in the ballpark and the Marlins swept them in short order and we all laughed at the Cubs, but really it was no one was laughing because it was 2020 and the world was a dark place, but the Cubs have not won a playoff game since 2017. And, you know, for a franchise that went 108 years between World Series championships, it's like 2017. That's not that long ago. But it's a little bit different now because since they won that World Series in 2016, it was like the Cubs. They're a marquee franchise in our sport. They should be playing games in October at Wrigley Field. And that has not been the case very often since then, as I mentioned. A very lackluster showing in those two games against the Fish. Now they are finally back. They earned the right to host. They did lose the division to the Brewers. But they do have this opportunity here to make some memories, to fly the W. But they will have to take down the San Diego Padres, who come into October on a very different note than they did a year ago. This time last season, we said, oh my God, this is the year for the Padres. Watch out, folks.
This is
the team to beat. And then they forgot how to score against the Dodgers and they were eliminated. Now we're not really talking about the Padres very much. There are some very reasonable reasons for that. This is not quite the same balanced roster. The stats do not reflect that of a overall bona fide threat to win it all. But there are still parts of this team. There have been steps back across the board. But there's still ingredients here where you're like, you know what? I could see it. So where do you want to begin with this series?
The Cubs season, I think, is also just worth reviewing very quickly, which is 2 months of the best offense in baseball, 2 months of being okay, and then like 2 months of a out of nowhere incredible pitching staff while the offense capitulated. PCA, story of the first half, has been awful since the All-Star game. Kyle Tucker is 1 year in Chicago, really good to start the year, probably got hurt, really terrible, definitely got hurt. He got off the injured list like 2 days ago. That feels very relevant. Neither of these teams are operating at full strength. I think that's important to understand. Xander Bogaerts was out for a long time. He did just come back. We'll see how good he is. Ramon Laureano, who is a huge acquisition for the Padres at the deadline, he is on the IL. He's going to miss the series. Nestor Cortez, another huge deadline ad. He's also hurt. I'm only half kidding. Joe Musgrove has been out all year. Jason Adam going down. He was one of the biggest pieces in the Padre bullpen. And then for the Cubs, no Cade Horton. Cade Horton, who was probably the best starting pitcher in the National League in the second half as a rookie. He's going to finish top three in rookie of the year in the NL. Fractured a rib somehow and is not going to pitch in this series. And so these teams are probably both thinking, if we can just get through this and we can get like Laureano back, we can get Cade Horton back, maybe we can make a little noise, but they got to get through this series first. Who is a player that you are thinking about, Jordan?
Definitely Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, the kind of theme of this Padres season from an offensive standpoint is, I mean, Merrill is a different case because he was the guy that was hurt and was clearly hampered for much of the season. But these dudes played and they didn't have bad seasons, you know, Machado and Tatis, but they weren't, you know, oh man, you know, they were not the MVP caliber seasons that we maybe thought. And just the power has not been here. This team ranked 28th in homers. And that's not just a ballpark thing. I know some, you know, Pecco has historically been not super homer friendly, but 28th in home runs. I mean, they had like 12 four-year homers on the Guardians. And so this lineup has just been not as imposing. And Laureano helped that a little bit. Gavin Sheets had his run. Ryan O'Hearn has you know, helped a little bit. But what is this offense against the Cubs pitching staff, who on paper just does not pass the eye test? They are not going to overwhelm you. Generally, they're going to throw strikes. They're not going to walk you. And they're going to say, let my defense cook. Because the Cubs have a case as the best defense in the sport, certainly for the players behind them. I know there's some other teams like Toronto that rate especially well defensively because of how good their catching is. You know, and Carson Kelly's fine, but it's really the guys behind these pitchers. And that's why the likes of Imanaga and Boyd and Tyon are like, here, hit it. We got the best defense in baseball. So that is why. And for San Diego, like, I think that could work because the Padres haven't hit the ball out of the ballpark. Circling back to my key player, Tatis, though, like, he still has these swings where you're like, oh, there it is. One of the best players on the planet. But we need to see that more. And I think it's going to be important for them if the Padres are going to go deep.
You bring up a really interesting point. I think it's relevant that these games in Chicago won't be at night. And in Wrigley, in the autumn with the wind howling in, the ball doesn't carry. How will that play? Does it help the Padres that they're more of a contact team that scores runs by not hitting it over the fence? Can the Cubs find a way to hit it through? If the game three is at night, is that going to play differently? Then, you know, there are all these things with the ballpark that I'm very interested in. As far as a singular character, this is all Kyle Tucker, right? How do you want to be remembered in Chicago, Kyle Tucker? You've had a topsy-turvy, bizarre season. You're probably gone in free agency. The Cubs went all in to get you and then didn't act at the deadline beyond that. Always weird. Yeah. Still weird. But it's like Kyle Tucker was acquired to be a superstar. He was valued and will be valued this winter as one of the best players in the sport. Does he play like it? In these three games. Does he have a moment? Because for 2 months, remember, it was Happy Land. Kyle Tucker was the talk of the town. And then it kind of has tailed off since then. What do you got, Kyle Tucker?
Yeah, especially because, I mean, it seems like he's still dealing with this injury to some degree. And so is he limited? I mean, the Cubs have enough other good hitters to score runs if Kyle Tucker is quiet. But certainly as the top free agent to be, he is someone that can really impact the narrative one way or another, both on an individual and a team level basis. But yeah, I think that the big thing I'm just thinking about is because this matchup's been locked in for so long, because these two teams have been floating along, they couldn't quite get up there and challenge for the division. We've just kind of been ho-hum for the last month or so. Are we overlooking one of them? Is one of these teams actually absolutely capable of moving on to the next round? Jake says no. Especially against Milwaukee, where we're going to start to have the doubts again of like, all right, is this the year for the Brewers? I just wonder if one of these teams can be feeling good going to Milwaukee and make things interesting. So that's where I'm at on here. I picked the Cubs in this series. I know I think we're more likely to be overlooking the Padres, but I think I am going to pick the Cubs. What about you?
Okay, I'm taking the Padres because of the bullpen.
Yep.
I think that they can just be so aggressive with their starting with putting the relievers in early. The Cubs are going to need to do that. Both of these teams are similarly kind of undermanned in the rotation. I think the best pitcher in this series is Nick Pivetta, who the Padres are going to throw in game one.
Yeah. But
that's the thing. It's like, okay, so let's say Nick Pivetta is the best starter in the series. Who's the second most important pitcher in the series? Mason Miller? You know, like the Padres are going to throw him in all three games if they need. Like, they're just – one of these games, they're just going to shorten it and just run the relievers out there, and they're going to cook. Right. And so I think that, to me, is the difference maker here. If the Cubs were able to throw Cade Horton, if he was healthy, I would pick them. He is not, and so I will not. Yep. Jordan, before we talk about the Mets, let's just do our freaking bracket, dude. Let's just do the bracket. All right?
Yeah.
We have it. If you're watching on YouTube, the bracket is up. In front of us, we have the visual. Let's just go through it. People love picks. They're always wrong. Mm-hmm. That's just how it goes. You go, you want to go series by series? You want me to do my whole thing? And then you go, let's give the people what they want.
How about, let's do one league at a time. You just go through your whole AL, and then I'll do mine, and then we'll do the NL.
Gardos over Tigers. Gardos over Mariners. So Gardos in the ALCS. I will do Yankees over Sox, Yankees over Jays, Yankees over Gardos in an ALCS rematch to reach the World Series.
I will go Guards over Tigers, Mariners over Cleveland, Yankees over Red Sox, Blue Jays over Yankees, Mariners over Blue Jays. I don't feel good about any of these American League teams. I did end up ranking the Mariners at the top just because I do think they are the most complete team right now. I think they're the team without the most obvious weakness. I stand by that. But they got to go do it, man. This is a new setting for these Seattle Mariners. And so they got a lot to prove here. And it really only just hit me last night. Like, oh, I'm going to watch the Mariners in the playoffs in Cleveland or Detroit next week. So I don't know exactly what that's going to be like, whether I'll see the Mariners season end, whether I'll see them win, or if it goes back to Seattle, I most likely won't be there. But either way, they will be here in the Midwest next week in one of these cities. And we will see what that looks like.
I will do Reds over Dodgers because I love
sure,
danger.
Yeah, can't kill him.
Phillies over Reds. I will do Pods over Cubs. I will do Brewers over Pods. And I will do Phillies over Brewers for a Phillies-Yankees World Series. We will all stay at your grandma's house in Princeton.
All right. I'll have to let her know. I am going to take the Dodgers. I'm going to take the Phillies. That's the series. When you were talking before about like thinking about like, oh man, one of these teams is about to be eliminated. That's the one that I'm looking ahead to. Again, sorry to continue the Reds disrespect, but the Dodgers-Phillies DS is one I am very much looking forward to. So I'll
be at that.
The Cubs. I'm going to take the Cubs over the Brewers. I think that's what I said on the website.
So sad.
Maybe I didn't. Okay, I thought I picked the Cubs over the Brewers.
It's not what you said.
Apparently not. Okay, I remember saying Cubs, but I guess not. We'll go with the Brewers, and then I'm sticking with the pick that I've said since the start of the season, which is the Phillies. I said the Phillies over the Astros in the World Series at the start of the year. I will stick with the Phillies over the AL West champion. And I will go with the Phillies over the... Yeah, Jake, you want to remind everyone? Rangers. You want to remind everyone what you picked?
Rangers over Braves. Book it, baby. And
that's why you listen to Baseball Barbacast. Last thing before we move on.
I don't get to say who I think is going to win the World Series.
Oh, I thought you said before. Oh, okay. Yeah.
No.
Who you got?
Yankees over Phillies. Yankees win the World Series. Okay. I think they do it.
Okay. Last thing I just want to remind everyone before we move to the teams that will not be playing this week. In 3 years of the wild card round, since we've had this format, home teams, the higher seed, are 4-8. Okay? So we're looking at this now and be like, these home teams aren't going to lose. Come on. 4-8, and only three of those 12 series have gone to a third game. So we're in store for something that's going to shock us. Yeah.
Three of those four were last year. Okay, only one road team won a series last year. Last season, it was the Mets going into Milwaukee and beating the Brewers at AmFam. The other three series were...
You're wrong.
No, that's wrong.
It's like, what are you talking about? Do I need to remind you what happened to the Orioles of Baltimore? Because
Orioles
Jake has blocked that out of his mind. The Orioles losing at home to the Royals and the Astros. So yeah, no, this is what we're talking about. The road teams have been doing just fine.
Padres beat the Braves though.
Recently, the Padres did beat the Braves, a Braves team that had played the day before on the other side. It's so stupid. So I'm glad we don't have to deal with that again. But anyway, just keep that in mind.
Sorry, everyone.
Just keep that in mind. All right. We are going to take a break. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, leave them in the comments section on YouTube. We will get to some of those at the end of the show. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about the Mets.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We have something that we and the whole baseball world and David Stearns and Steve Cohen need to talk about. The New York Mets are on vacation. Today at 3:00, the president of bad operations, David Stearns, will address the media to offer a eulogy, a post-mortem of the season. The New York Mets finished the year 83-79, the same record as the Cincinnati Reds, who are in the playoffs. They did not get the tiebreaker. On the final day of the season yesterday, the Reds lost, opening the door for the Mets to sneak in. All they needed to do was beat the Miami Marlins, and guess what? They did not. They lost to the Marlins. They did not score a run against the Marlins, and this Mets season, which looked like such a joy back in June. They had the best record in baseball at one point, and then it was a slow leakage. Before you knew it, there was sewage up to your kneecaps, and you were having a bad, bad time. What in the world happened here, Jordan?
I mean, you saw it more up close than I did before you moved, but this was a very, very gradual implosion. This is not a late breaking collapse. This is 100 games in the making, right? This stat from Anthony DiComo. I'm mixing up. I was about to say Andy Martino. Anthony DiComo, of course, the great Mets beat writer for MLB.com. Only the White Sox, Nats, Twins, and Rockies were worse over their final 93 games. And so what you have there is a team that was just not very good for a majority of the season. And it looks more, harder to believe because of how good they were for those first, 6-7 weeks. But that's a large sample of bad baseball. And had they gotten in with 84 wins, yes, we would have said all the same things about it resetting like we were about the Tigers. But it still would have been like, yikes, guys. Like, come on. I mean, this was still not the plan. And we can kind of get into to how we ended up here and who really deserves the blame. We're recording this, of course, speaking on Monday morning before David Stearns has addressed the media. We do have a tweet from Steve Cohen. Do we want to read that?
We do, because one of the main characters in the Mets, obviously owner Steve Cohen, one of the richest people in the world. He used to tweet a lot more than he does now. He last tweeted on August 15th, and you and I had discussed, was he going to tweet again before the season ended? And the answer is no. He tweeted this. Mets fans everywhere, I owe you an apology. Space, period, space. You did your part by showing up and supporting the team. We didn't do our part. We will do a postmortem and figure out the obvious and less obvious reasons why the team didn't perform up to your and my expectations. We are all feeling raw emotions today. I would say negative emotions. I know how much time and effort you've put into this team. The result was unacceptable. Your emotions tell me how much you care and continues to motivate the organization to do better. Thank you to the best fans in sports. Nothing particularly revealing here, in my opinion, pretty boilerplate. One of the more interesting dynamics of the season was that last year during the OMG Grimace Jamboree, Mets fans didn't really show up. Like, attendance was pretty disappointing, even though they were having this awesome season. And I know that there is a lag in regards to attendance often. So Steve Cohen in spring training, I like asked him this. I was like, yo, why was attendance down? And he said, there's always been a little bit of skepticism with the Mets and believing that we're going to be sustainable winners, sustainably be in the playoffs. I think Met fans have had this negative perception of the Mets and their own fandom. One of my goals is to break that negativity and have them believe that we're going to be sustainable year in, year out. They can come to the ballpark and enjoy it. And they did come to the ballpark and they did enjoy it. The fans showed up. Biggest year-over-year attendance jump in baseball. And how did the team respond? By running around with their pants at their ankles, with blindfolds on, over the latter half of the season. Jeebus creebus.
And like, I think that is what is so frustrating, is that now you have two seasons really here where, I mean, you could say it's three, depending on what you say about 2023, but so much has changed for the better about the direction of the Mets, obviously, right? I don't think we have to explain that too deeply. At the same time, for them to still find ways to disappoint their fans in ways that you couldn't fathom, last year felt like such an important step because it was like, listen, no one's expecting you to suddenly win the World Series every year.
It was belief.
No one's expecting hope. You to win the World Series every year, but it's like, the good teams, they go to the postseason more often than not, and then they usually lose, but they put up a fight, and they it kind of follows a trajectory of a team that you're excited to buy into again the next year, right? And there's a huge range of those teams that have done that. I mean, Cleveland and Milwaukee are examples of that. Now, you could say, well, great, what have you really accomplished? But they have found a way to be reliably relevant all the way through basically every season, or well more often than not. And for the Mets to find now multiple times, multiple ways to not do that, whether it's what happened in 2023 or what happened this year under the Steve Cohen leadership, with how much is being invested in this team, it is both shocking and frankly disappointing, which I think Steve Cohen is being very transparent about. And as we can get into how this happened and who is to blame, you know, that we can point all kinds of fingers in different directions. But I mean, this one in particular, it's like, right, what you're talking about there, what Steve Cohen is getting at, which is Mets fans have a negative perception. Well, yeah, because stuff like this keeps happening. And we thought that we were done with these kinds of things. Fine, if you want to lose the NLCS, that happens to good teams. That's fine. Okay, right? You know, but this does not happen to all the teams. It just doesn't.
That is the most important thing, right? Because before Steve Cohen, the Mets were bumbling, and any moment of success felt like an aberration, And behind any success, there was no aura of sustainability behind it, right? And they would just do these things that didn't happen to other teams, whether it was like Noah Syndergaard getting hand, foot, mouth disease or like stuff like that, right? And I have said for the last year and a half that when Jorge Lopez threw his temper tantrum and the glove flew into the stands, that was the end of the Wilpon era, the previous ownership group, that weird things did not happen in a negative way to the Mets anymore. And it felt like that was those demons had been buried, right? They were kind of past that. Because I do think that from an institutional perspective, they're in a good place. The farm system is good. They have a very smart general manager who did not do enough this year, but I think is good at his job. They have a ton of good players. I think and people are coming out. They're making a ton of money, and the stadium experience is as fun and engaging as anything in baseball. I think there's a lot of good. And I think that Mets fans should be hopeful. The sky is not falling, even though it just fell. That being said, that is all true. This is also an unacceptable capitulation, right? And let's throw some blame around. I think David Stearns... So in my mind, it's like 70% run prevention, right?
Yes.
An inability to keep runs off the scoreboard. Their offense over the last 2 months was like the best in the league. I tweeted, where should the blame go? Someone said their batting average with runners in scoring position. I think the Mets were second in baseball over the last 2 months with runners in scoring position and batting average and number one in OPS. Like, the offense was inconsistent at times, but as a whole, it produced. And so the pitching is the blame. So who gets the blame? 50% David Stearns. My good dude, you got too cute. You had a whole rotation of reclamation projects last year. A lot of them worked, and instead of going out and, you know, acquiring a starter or paying Max Fried or Nady Eovaldi or Nick Pivetta, you went to the bottom of the barrel, the middle of the barrel, and you got Frankie Montas and brought back Sean Manaea and Clay Holmes. It just didn't work, and he should have gotten some more actual pitchers, whether in free agency or at the deadline.
Yeah, but the guys that you're referring to there, it's not just like, oh, spend more, spend more, spend more. You also just have to do it better. I mean, Frankie Montas.
And they did last year.
And they did last year. I think you can do that, but there's risks associated with it. And when it doesn't go well, you look extra foolish. But also, you know, you talk about the actual pitchers involved and how they ended up trending the way that they did. I mean, again, injuries were clearly relevant for Sean Manaea and clearly relevant for Kodai Senga and clearly relevant for Frankie Montas. Whatever. Those guys are making a lot of money and not pitching well. So however we got there, it was not good enough. You were ending up asking these three rookies to save your ass. Right? Like, if you have this great farm system, go do that. And, you know, Clay Holmes, God bless him, hell of a – I mean, it's hard to get mad at Clay Holmes, who made 30-plus starts, and when we were all being like, what, that guy's going to start? Like, it's not really on him. But then when he does falter late, you're like, oh, Clay Holmes, that was a bad one. It's like, no, that was not that bad relative to some of these other decisions. And then the bullpen was never deep enough. You tried to fix that at the deadline. It didn't work. And then obviously, you know, that the deadline is the other part of it with Stearns, where we all said, oh, man, they did it. They went for it. This is not a situation like the Tigers, who as the day after the deadline, were like, well, this isn't enough. And it seems like it wasn't enough. But the Tigers still found their way into the postseason. And the Mets did not, because Cedric Mullins was awful. Ryan Helsley was awful. Tyler Rogers was not a difference maker. And now here they are with 83 wins and not an 83 wins that is worth more than the Reds' 83 wins.
David Stearns, 50%, should have gotten some actual pitchers. 20% blame, the pitchers. It should have been better at pitching.
Okay? Yeah, guys, pitch
10%.
Better.
Steve Cohen should have told David Stearns to get some better pitchers. That's 80%.
Here's your infinite 10% glitch. 10% is the infinite money glitch. I'm right
money,
here.
Infinite money glitch.
I am the embodiment of the infinite money. It's like, okay, it's like, well, that's what you used to get Juan Soto. Congratulations. That worked. Juan Soto had a pretty good season. Juan Soto almost went 40-40.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Wasn't good enough.
That's 80%. 10%, the defense. Didn't help those pitchers that weren't that good down the stretch. Mark Vientos, minus 7 outs above average. Juan Soto, minus 12. Pete Alonso, minus 9. Having, that is, I believe, three of, like, the worst defenders. Like, like, those guys are all really bad. And they were all basically playing every day. I mean, if you go, you know, negative defensive value in baseball, there's Soto and Pete and Vientos, like, right down there at the bottom. That's a big deal. I would say 2%, not bringing back Jose Iglesias. I think this clubhouse lacked zip, zest, edge, spunk. They needed, like, either like a goofball or a hardo. Instead, they just had a lot of businessmen. And I think this is not business. This is baseball. 2% is Carlos Mendoza, because if a team does this, the manager has to get 2% blame, at least. He is not going to get fired. They believe in him. I think he's good at his job. He had some missteps down the stretch. That leaves 1%, and that 1% was Mr. Met falling off the stage at that Lumineers concert. I think that was back in June. Maybe in July.
It was later.
Mets
it was
record
July.
Since then. Yeah. Mets record since then, you know, not good.
No, not good enough. Not good enough. And that is very clear. And now where they go from here is fascinating, because we get to have the Pete Alonso conversation all over again, except instead of coming off a very, you know, oh, we're feeling good. Relic. Okay, Mets, you know, maybe we keep, maybe we can keep him, maybe we can't, but we're still feeling good regardless. That is not going to be the tone this year. And no. Pete had a great season, and Pete should try and get as much money as he can, because he's earned it. He played every game, and he hit a bunch of home runs. He was very good. And we're just going to do it all over. So, and now we have to talk about it even earlier than we did last year, which is not fun. But that is something that we are definitely going to do. But again, you could still say the future is bright for the Mets, but they do have a lot of existential questions to answer, Pete Alonso chief among them, and Edwin Diaz as well, although it's not clear if we know for sure he's going to opt out yet. We will find out. One other team we have to say goodbye to in a more significant manner before we turbo mode through the rest of the Game 162 takeaways is the Houston Astros, who missed the postseason for the first time since 2016. And this season does not require a blame chart as divvied up as we just did with the Mets, because it's very simple. This was the most injured team in the league, or one of a few of them, and they simply could not recover. The fact that they were still alive going into the final weekend is a testament to what this organization does well. However, it was not enough. And for that to be the case in any season would have been a big deal. Anytime last year, as the Astros, of course, got embarrassed at home by the Tigers in the postseason, it kind of felt like, whoa, like, are we kind of, is this era kind of ending? Of course, we see Bregman leave, we see Tucker leave, and it's like, all right, who's left? We kind of reach back and have a desperation move back into the past and bring back Carlos Correa from Minnesota. That doesn't quite get the job done. Now, he'll stick around moving forward. Him and Altuve are reunited. But now Framber Valdez is probably gone, and this team is just going to slowly look less and less recognizable. And while they have proven a lot, of course, over the last decade, and the fact that they were even, as I mentioned, like, still an amazing achievement for to be relevant this deep into the season, considering the injuries they dealt with, for Yordan to essentially be a total non-factor this year was ultimately too much to overcome. And we will see where they go from here, because it is, we can no longer just default to the Astros. I think that's the takeaway. The Mariners went out and took it. And the Astros, while I think that I'm sure they'll still go into next year with a good roster, we just can't be like, oh, well, it's the Astros. We're that's over. That is over now.
Let's fly through the rest. We have so much else to talk about. There are so many interesting things that happen on the last day of the season. Goodbyes, storylines to wrap up, and they kind of get lost in the mix. And we're going to speed through them all in this edition of Turbo Mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Farewells. Charlie Morton, who ruined almost two team seasons, Detroit and Baltimore, ended up back on the Braves the final week of the year and got one last goodbye with the franchise that originally drafted him all the way back, I believe, in 2002.
Yeah, what a run for Charlie Morton. Obviously not the way he wanted to go out, but he earned this moment for sure. And with the Braves claiming literally everyone on waivers, I'm glad they could find a room for Charlie. Alek Manoah, by the way, on the Braves. Excited to talk about that in February. Yeah, Alek Manoah on the Braves. Yeah, probably missed that. But Charlie Morton will not be on the Braves next year. And he seems like he's finally done. And what a freaking career. Couple other farewells. We had Michael A. Taylor announcing his retirement while the White Sox were at Nats Park. Michael A. Taylor was a pretty important Nats role player early on in his career. Someone that we certainly is, you know, growing up in that area. Like Michael A. Taylor, I remember watching Michael A. Taylor hitting a walk-off single for the Hagerstown Suns over 10 years ago. So here he is retiring on the White Sox, playing against the Nats. Both those teams stink, and we are all old. So congratulations to Michael A. Taylor. Michael A. Tater, once upon a time.
Michael A. Tater. Kershaw made his last regular season start, maybe his last start ever in Seattle. And then Wilmer Flores, who has been in San Francisco now for almost as long as he was with the Mets.
Oh, wow. That's a good
hilarious
point.
Because
yeah,
he
same.
Was
six
with
seasons,
the Mets for six years.
Six seasons in each.
Totally forgot he spent a year in Arizona in the middle. Totally just blew my mind. Like, yep. Totally no memory of that. Yep. And he's just been good for them. Like, he's been totally good. What a career for Wilmer Flores. I love guys who have more years, like everyday position players that have more years than war.
That is a fun group. That is a fun group. Catchers are normally the ones you're looking at there, but it has been a really, really solid career for Wilmer in more ways than one. Let's talk about James Wood, Jake. He didn't quite get there. James Wood only struck out 221 times this year. Did not quite set the record. Mark Reynolds, 223. Had he played that game against Chris Sale last week, he probably gets there, but instead he finishes on a not historic note. And I love James Wood, so he avoided this. He avoided this, but I will remember this chase.
Third all-time single-season strikeouts, 221. Now, he had way more plate appearances. So he had like 40 more than the dudes that are just in front of him because he was really good and played a lot. You know, if he keeps working hard, he could get there one day. This is a record he can break if he works hard.
Yep.
He sets his mind to it.
Speaking
I can break this record. Give me the chance.
Speaking of records, Matt Olson played in his 782nd game in a row. That is the 12th longest streak in Major League Baseball history. Still a lot of work to do to get to Cal Ripken. But like Cal Ripken, the other cool thing about Matt Olson, no DH days. We're going out there and posting.
No,
even amidst this catastrophic Braves season, Matt Olson was there every damn day. Salute to him and the rest of the 162 game club, which includes Pete Alonso, Ellie De La Cruz, Brent Rooker, Kyle Schwarber, and Rafael Devers, who played 163 games thanks to his trade from San Francisco to Boston. Another reminder that that Rafi posts and Rafi rakes. God bless him.
There is no better reminder that a guy plays every day than having 163 games played in a season. That is just so cool. Yes.
Happy for Rafi. Giants, of course. Willy Adames finally gets to 30 homers. First 30 homer season by a San Francisco hitter since Barry Bonds. And they went 81-81 because, of course, they did. Giants, we will see
you
can do something about that next year. Giants, you just cannot escape it. Two more topics. Jose De Leon. This has to be one of the highlights of 162. Jose De Leon spent almost the entire season in AAA with the Red Sox. The Red Sox were basically punting the last game of the season, getting some rest. Wouldn't have
kind
minded
of
having
trying
to, yeah, it was
to lose because if the Red Sox had lost that last game, they would have played the Guardians instead of the Yankees.
Yes, but so what? They said, hey, someone's got a pitch. We're not going to throw any of our main guys. And they get Jose De Leon, once a prospect. He's kind of bounced around the last couple of years. And he's been in AAA with Boston. Hadn't pitched in a few weeks. Was 0-9 this season with like a 7 ERA with Worcester. And they were like, hey, dude, you want to throw? He's like, sure. Yeah, I'm good. Let's do it. No problem. Whatever. And he showed up.
No, he lied, dude. That's the best
the
part.
Seventh inning. Yeah.
He was in Puerto Rico planning on just like going to the beach for the day. Red Sox called and said, if asked, were like, hey, have you been throwing still? He was like, yeah, for sure, dude.
For sure, dude. Yeah, oh, throwing, absolutely.
Been throwing them back, brother. I've been throwing beers back. And so he took a midnight flight and pitched really well. Got the win. Incredible stuff. We interviewed him when he was in AAA with the Dodgers. Like, what a delightful guy. And I'm glad that he got this moment. He's had a tough road with a lot of injuries. Happy for Jose De Leon. Now he can go back to the beach. You know, they should let him hang out for the playoffs. They should just bring him to New York. Like,
he earned it.
Travel squad.
He earned it with that performance. And finally, we finished this playoff preview episode by talking about the teams that finished the farthest away from the postseason. And congratulations to the Minnesota Twins for securing the second best draft lottery odds. Operation hashtag rock bottom. The tank fest for UCLA shortstop Rock Chalowski was a resounding success. At least they put themselves in position. We will see in December who wins this draft lottery. But the Twins getting walked off by the Phillies, securing the second best draft lottery odds. The Orioles getting swept by the Yankees, securing the fourth best draft lottery odds. And the Colorado Rockies, who finished 43-119, are not eligible for the draft lottery despite their negative 424 run differential. They allowed over 1,000 runs, and they were one of the worst teams of all time. But at long last, the 2025 Rocky season is complete. Anyone who endured that up close in Colorado, we salute you. We know those fans deserve better. We know everyone involved in that team deserves better. Yet, I just hope it is not this bad next year, and they will have to do a lot. For I am very curious what the projections are going to say about this team next season, because we could be seeing some historic lows for Fangraphs and Pecota. But it's a tough scene. But it is over. They did not lose more games than last year's White Sox, but they sure allowed way more runs. And that is one of the stories of the 2025 season, the Colorado Rockies. And that is where we will finish. If you have, should we do? First of all, if you tuned in on YouTube, thank you. We appreciate it. We got a lot of Mets fans who are just commiserating, of course. Reds fans, Reds fans who are seemingly various levels of confident versus whatever. Oh man, Cole saying he attended 15 Rockies home games. That is, it seems like a good time. So clearly Coors Field is a damn good time, but the baseball, not so much. This from Nick, a longtime listener. Jake and Jordan, make me feel better about the Mets not caring to show up at all to the season after June. Can't do that. Nick, so Nick says also he hopes the Reds get blown out 30-0 in two games. Yeah, I guess, right? Like, I guess you do. I don't know. It's always one of those weird things. How do you feel about the team that got in over
you? Want the world to make sense again. Right. No, it's not even about the team that got in over you. It's about grappling with reality. It's like something needs to be real. Like, stuff has to matter. Yes. You know,
Tyler offering us his couch in Princeton. If my grandma can't host, that's awesome. We appreciate it, Tyler. If we do get that Phillies and Yankees World Series, this is from Zach. I thought this one is funny. Baseball's nightmare Final Four: Reds, Brewers, Blue Jays, and pick your fourth. Between Seattle, Cleveland, and Detroit, we will see getting after our Dodgers Yankees World Series. Will we end up, you know, with Brewers Guardians or something like that?
That is a great point. Is that the bracket has both? So, like, you could get a really tantalizing, you know, like Dodgers, Cubs, Yankees. I would probably say Mariners have the most sauce over there. Mm-hmm. Or you could get, Toronto. Here's a little peek behind the curtain. There is no bigger catastrophe for a lot of we need the big market teams than Toronto. Sneaky. Because of just the way media rights work, right? Like, Fox doesn't have those games in Canada. Okay. Yeah,
we'll see. I would love to go to Toronto in October, so I don't really care about that stuff, but we will see what we end up with. There are a lot of paths to an interesting postseason field, and you will join us on this journey. We appreciate all the support. Obviously, this was quite a lengthy episode, but hopefully with this day off, no games, I got to get to the workout. I got to get going if I'm going to hear Tarek Skubal talk. But this has been fun. So thank you all for joining us wherever you tuned in. Or if you're listening after the fact, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will be back on Friday. This will just be two shows this week. After that, we're going to be trying to go as often as possible in the postseason. But with Yom Kippur, with just like the chaos of these wild card games, which just kind of go by in a blink. Like it is, these seasons are just like, oh, okay, Wednesday afternoon, these team seasons are over and it's going to go very fast. So we're going to take stock in the whole round and we'll be back on Friday. So enjoy the baseball. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas and everyone else who helps make this live show possible at Yahoo Sports. Again, we are so excited to be at Yahoo long term and continue to make baseball stuff here because it has been wonderful. So thank you all for supporting us here, and we will talk to you all later this week. Bye bye bye.